Chapter 8.
History is nothing more than a series of opinions about the past, Professor Locke informed his class.
He was a short, elderly man with long white hair, wearing a pair of spectacles, through which he peered suspiciously at his students.
Who, I might ask you, won the Battle of Janus?
A male student raised his hand.
We did, sir.
Another student jumped up almost before the first speaker had finished.
No, we won.
Professor Locke smiled.
A perfect demonstration of the essential truth of my statement. The Battle of Janus was fought out between Umbria and Home for domination of the city of Janus and the trade routes that ran through the Janus mountain range. While Umbria was pushed back, allowing Home to claim a victory, the battle was so costly that reinforcements from Umbria were able to push Home back out of the city within the month.
His smile grew wider.
So tell me, who really won the battle?
Emily considered the question while the more nationalistic of her classmates argued the point. Destroying an empire to win a battle was no victory, as she'd learned playing computer games. A victory that cost an army could be fatal if there was no time to produce a second army. There had been a Greek king who'd fought the Roman Republic, she recalled, who had bemoaned his exceedingly costly victory in one battle and lost the war.
The allied lands may have united to fight the necromancers, the professor said, but they still disagree on many things. One of them is on history. No kingdom or city-state shares the same view of history, which can be irritating if one happens to be a historian. And yet our history, which is shared even if they don't want to admit it, explains why we ended up facing the necromancers today.
There was a long pause.
Thousands of years ago, the human race warred with the elves. The elves were magic. The elves were formidable. But there were millions of humans. It was our time, we believed, and we no longer wanted to be dominated by the fair folk. So we warred with them until they were driven back into their hidden settlements and built the first empire in the rubble of their empire. But we made a dreadful mistake. We could have reached out to the orcs and goblins, offshoots of humanity created by the elves. Instead, also we warred with them, forcing them into an alliance with the remaining elves. Many years later, they returned and waged war on the First Empire itself. They destroyed the First Empire.
Emily shivered, remembering what she'd seen as the dragon had carried her from Void's Tower to Whitehall. Destroyed cities, including structures she was convinced hadn't been produced by human beings, their populations slaughtered or driven away to starve. Had that been the result of the war against the elves, or had it had a far darker cause?
Those were terrible days, Professor Locke said. The elves raised countless monsters to lay waste to our lands. Millions died as fire drakes blew their poisonous breath over human settlements, and giant crabs emerged from the seas to destroy harbors, while mermen sank ships in the ocean. The only solution seemed to be to reach for far greater magic, and so we did. We discovered that we could use murder to power our spells, and use them to strike back against the elves. Eventually, we rallied and drove the elves to the brink of extinction. But as so often happens, the weapon we used to win the war turned in our hands. The necromancers were unable to channel the vast power they possessed without going mad, becoming monsters in human form. They didn't want to stop drinking in the mana from thousands of slaughtered humans, or basking in the sheer joy of power. Eventually, they attempted to take over the Second Empire. The battle to stop them also shattered any hope of establishing a new human unity.
Emily considered it, wondering, absently, why murder was required. Why not a willing sacrifice? Would it have made any difference if the sacrifices had volunteered themselves to the necromancers? But Shaedae had definitely been insane. No matter how genteel he'd acted, he'd planned to sacrifice Emily to the harrowing, whatever that was, and his plan would have exploded in his face if Void hadn't intervened. Professor Locke nodded towards the map on the wall. Emily studied it with interest. The continents bore little resemblance to anything she remembered from her own world. One vast continent was roughly the size of Europe, Asia, and America put together, while a smaller continent to the south was little bigger than Australia. A network of islands, Japan and Britain put together, she decided, dominated the final part of the globe. They did know that their world was a sphere, but it didn't seem to have a name. 32 states were part of the Allied lands, if she was reading the map correctly. Most of them were grouped to the north of the largest continent, with a handful in the smaller continent and islands. Below them, there was a wasteland. It had to have been where Shaedae had attempted to sacrifice her after she'd been kidnapped from her world. She remembered the barren lands she'd flown over and shivered. The battle to stop the necromancers might as well have been fought with atomic bombs. It might even have been kinder in the long run.
"The necromancers fled into the Deadlands to the south," the professor said. "There they built their strongholds, grew their slaves, and eventually mounted a new assault on the Allied lands. Their threat is overwhelming. Given enough time, they will produce more armies of monsters to turn against us and crush the Allied lands. The only thing that has saved us so far is their disunity. We cannot expect them to remain disunited forever."
Their disunity? Emily wondered. She'd had the impression that Shaedae was acting independently of the other necromancers. He'd certainly not summoned any others to join him in sacrificing her for power. One of the students stuck up his hand, interrupting Emily's thought.
"Can we not keep them disunited, Professor? We could offer to dicker with them if they fought each other."
"It has been tried," Professor Locke said.
He tapped a darkened patch on the map.
"The King of Halers believed that he could buy off one of the necromancers, an unpleasant fellow called Gower. Gower was sent hundreds of the king's subjects as sacrifices in the hope that it would buy the king's independence. But Gower wormed his way into the kingdom's power structure and turned the nobles against the king, the peasants against the nobles, and the army against everyone. Eventually, Halers was so badly racked by civil war that the necromancer was able to walk in and take over. Gower destroyed the kingdom. His monsters wiped out the remaining nobles before killing enough of the peasants to keep the rest thoroughly cowed, those that didn't flee in time. Now it is a source of monsters and magical sacrifices for the necromancers, all because a king was foolish enough to believe that a necromancer could be bribed into good behavior. We cannot negotiate with the necromancers. All we can do is muster our own power and prepare for the coming struggle."
Emily knew, looking at the map, that it would be difficult. Void had told her that the necromancers were slowly outflanking the Allied lands, but he hadn't managed to convey just how desperate the situation was. If the necromancers managed to cooperate long enough to mount a major offensive, they could drive up through the mountains and split the Allied lands in half. They'd then have access to vast resources and humans for sacrifice that they could use to crush the rest of the Allied lands. And then they could turn their attention to the other continents.
"We do have some advantages," Professor Locke said. "Most importantly, necromancers are driven insane by the sheer power they channel through their minds. They have been known to lash out at each other without premeditation, as well as planning betrayals for reasons that only make sense in their own addled minds. Their power levels also slowly kill them, as their brains cannot tolerate the pressure they put on them for long. As they grow older, they are forced to channel more and more power to keep themselves alive, slowly becoming undead lich creatures. The true horror of necromancy is that eventually they will run out of humans to sacrifice and die out, leaving the land behind them a waste.
Emily spoke before she could think better of it. Did the elves teach the first necromancers how to become necromancers? Professor Locke studied her for a long moment, thoughtfully.
And what, young lady, do you mean by that?
His gaze was disconcerting. Back home, she would rarely have been called to justify herself to anyone at school. Here, if necromancers need a constantly increasing supply of power merely to keep themselves alive, Emily said, hastily formulating her thoughts, eventually they're going to run out of power.
As I said, the professor reminded her impatiently.
Well, yes, but they have to know that, Emily countered. So why did they even start, back when their brains were presumably not addled by necromancy? They had to have realized that necromancy would eventually exterminate the entire human race. But the elves might have given them the idea, knowing that the human race would either have to abandon necromancy or destroy itself. Either way, they would win.
An interesting theory, Professor Locke said, finally. And quite possibly accurate.
He leaned back, thoughtfully.
But tell me, how could we have beaten the elves without necromancy?
Emily knew better than to continue the argument. She simply didn't know enough to make a good case one way or the other, and if necromancy had made the difference between victory or defeat, even the alien-minded fair folk of fantasy novels would have hesitated before giving such a weapon to humanity. Unless they believed that humanity would discover it for themselves anyway. She shook her head. That way lay madness and a lifetime of raving about conspiracy theories on the internet.
As I said at the start, history is really nothing more than opinions,
Locke said, turning back to the class at large.
Can anyone tell me when the Treaty of Umbria was signed?
A burly-looking male student put up his hand.
90 years ago, Professor. It bound the Allied lands together into a united force to defend us against necromancers.
True enough,
Locke agreed.
Why didn't the rulers of the Allied lands unite into a third empire?
Emily could guess at the answer, but left another student to try her luck. Because the bigger kingdoms intended to dominate the little kingdoms, the student said. The little kingdoms knew better than to subordinate themselves to the bigger kingdoms, which would have more power in a united empire.
You mean that your puny kingdom didn't want to commit to the united defense?
One of the boys muttered.
Your people have always been cowards.
Stay behind after class ends,
Locke said. His ears were sharper than Emily had realized. His tone promised an unpleasant experience for the nationalist.
Believing that other kingdoms are inherently better or worse than your own kingdom is asking for trouble.
The professor looked back at the first speaker.
Interesting answer, but incomplete.
He nodded towards the map.
Anyone else want to try to flesh out Gwen's answer?
Several students exchanged glances before another girl raised her hand. The necromancers were already working their way into the castles and palaces where the kings lived, weakening their resolve to fight?
Possible, but that wasn't such a concern back in those days. Not until after Halers fell,
Locke said. He pointed toward the map.
The answer should be obvious.
Emily remembered Alexander the Great and what had happened after his death in Babylon. His companions, once his loyal followers, had divided his colossal empire up amongst themselves and tried to create their own dynasties. An empire that had spanned much of the known world had been reduced to a handful of squabbling kingdoms, which had eventually been absorbed by the Roman Empire. They'd moved from globalists to men unable to see beyond their own borders. They were all more concerned with their local politics than they were with the entire world, she said slowly. Now she had said it out loud, she was confident that it was the right answer. They worried more about the kingdom next to them than the expanding necromantic empire, at least until it was too late to nip the necromancers in the bud.
A good answer, Locke said, and one that is barely enough to save you from the consequences of speaking without holding up your hand.
He looked around the classroom, leaving Emily flushing in embarrassment.
She is quite right, he said, addressing them all. The necromancers were allowed to become such a problem because no one, not even those who were trained at Whitehall, attempted to do something about it before it was too late. Right now, we have a major problem. We have to hold the line at multiple different points, knowing that if we lose one, we may well lose everything.
Emily nodded to herself. It was possible, probable even, that some parties were evacuating as many people as they could from the big continent, but she knew that they couldn't evacuate them all before it was too late. Could they surrender the large continent and leave the necromancers to die when they ran out of sacrifices? She doubted it. Void had demonstrated that teleportation was possible, which suggested that the necromancers would be able to teleport entire armies right around the world. After a long pause, she realized that couldn't be possible on a large scale. Surely the Allied lands would have fallen a long time ago if the necromancers could teleport with impunity. She took another look at the map. It seemed to her that they must survive through a combination of geography and luck, neither of which would apply if the necromancers could teleport. Emily shook her head, dragging her attention back to the professor. She just didn't know enough to make an informed guess.
In theory, this course is not an elective, Locke said,
as he returned to his desk and stood in front of it, looking at the students through his spectacles.
A full grasp of history is important for anyone who intends to practice magic as a graduate of Whitehall, rather than a hedge witch or court wizard. You will need to learn history in order to put our local squabbles in perspective, and to understand why it is vitally important that we unite against the necromancers. But I know that many of you feel that history is much less important than actually learning magic and control, and I am too old to teach students who don't want to learn. If you would prefer to spend these periods studying something else, you may choose to withdraw from my class and work quietly in the library. Later, should you change your mind, you may attend classes for younger students.
He smiled rather ruefully.
Over the next few months, we will cover a wide range of topics. The development of magic from the early days until the basic rules were discovered by the great research sorcerers. How and why magic changed the course of history. The origin of the great wars with the elves, goblins, orcs, and the other semi-human races. What happened to build the first empire, and why it was taken by surprise and destroyed in the Second Great War. The history of magical artifacts, including legends of invincible wands, swords carried only by true kings, and even stranger objects from before the dawn of recorded history. I will probably be stretching your preconceptions, he added. You know your kingdom's own version of history, of course, but you will be surprised to see where it jibes and disagrees with that kept by the history monks. Many of you will prefer to storm out of the class rather than accept that other versions of history exist. Frankly, that's your problem, not mine.
He glanced at his watch.
There's 20 minutes left, but I've said as much as I want to say right now, he concluded. Should you decide you want to leave history class for the moment, simply don't attend the next class. You will be marked as absent, but there will be no punishment. Your ignorance will be punishment enough.
Emily understood, although she suspected that few others in the class shared her understanding. She knew almost nothing about this world, except what she could pick up from her tutors, her roommates, and, now that she had permission, the library. It was easy to see that she had to learn as quickly as possible, if only to ensure that she knew what she was talking about in the future. She didn't even have the basics anyone who grew up in the new world would know. But the others wouldn't understand their own ignorance. How could they? They'd been told the truth, at least the truth as it was officially sanctioned in their kingdoms, long before they'd been accepted at Whitehall. She could easily see why Professor Locke would prefer not to have to teach students who didn't want to be there. He was quite right, really. Their ignorance was likely to cost them dearly in the future.
"Class dismissed," Locke said. "I hope to see some of you on Friday."
Emily rose to her feet and headed towards the door, following the other students. They'd have a plan for making the best use of their extra break between classes, perhaps drinking water or juice, or maybe they'd even badger the kitchen staff into giving them snacks. But Emily wasn't so sure what to do. She didn't have any other classes for the rest of the day, and the only other thing she could think of to do was to visit the library. She didn't even know where Emeka was, or if she was free right now. Shaking her head, she walked out of the classroom, and right into a group of girls waiting for her. One of them caught her arm and held it tightly. The others surrounded her, preventing any retreat. It was a trap.
"So tell me," the leader purred, "where do you come from?"